You're listening to the Peachtree Road Storybook Audio Podcast, sharing the stories from the last 100 years of Peachtree Road United Methodist Church. I'm your host and chair of the PRUMC Centennial Committee, Eve Respis.
Well, I'd like to say that, and I'm going to try to stay away from the personal aspect because the rest of it's what's important, but I started attending Peachtree Road in 48 and continued through 49. And in the meantime, some changes in my life were about to take place. And I wound up joining Peachtree Road in 1950. And since that time, I've enjoyed thoroughly watching the growth of the church, and I'm not necessarily talking about the production of buildings or that sort of tangible thing. I'm talking about what I think made this church grow. And I can remember so many people, and I will probably, if I mention names, I'll probably miss some, but I can remember so many people that I felt were the driving force and what was happening in the church. And I would like to mention some of those people because they deserve it. I can remember that Oliver Slale and Dr. Charles Cooper and Herman Thompson and Clarence Stovall and just so many, Harold Hill Sr., just so many people. Clyde Kennedy, father of our present Clyde Kennedy. Harold Hill, of course, father of our present Bob and Harold Hill. And there are just so many of those people that were so instrumental in causing things to happen. I can remember Mr. Respis, always in the forefront, helping the church get organized as in a business way. And I can remember Mr. Justy and Judge Head and so many of those people that gave up their time. I remember one lady specifically, Ms. Clarence Stovall. When I started attending, I was at Tech, and I had grown up in Decatur as a Presbyterian, but I was living in the Brookhaven, Sandy Springs area, and I can remember the first Sunday I showed up by myself, and I was sitting down near the front on the left-hand side, more or less by myself, and she saw me, didn't know me, I didn't know her. But she got up from the other side of the church. This is in the what's now a chapel. And she got up and came over to me just before the service started. And then every time I was at church after that, she would make a point to greet me and talk with me. And that's a long time ago. That would have been in 1948, as I mentioned. Now, the growth of the church, for instance, we've had 16 senior ministers here since 1925, and I remember that the first eight of those 16 were here 1, 2, or 3 years. The last eight, I get emotional when I talk about the church. The last eight have been here anywhere from 4 years to 20 years. And so we've had a change naturally in the way, I think you said you're going to edit this, you're going to have to, because I'm going to have to blow my nose, okay?
You're going to get me going. I feel the same way.
Anyway, as the church began with its 15 or 20 members down the road, and grew to the size it is now, in my mind, it was a combination of all this strong leadership that the church has had through all the years, from day one, from 1925. We've had a tremendous growth in the last couple of decades, but the base for all of it was in 1925, and then all those leaders that were willing to be superintendent of the Sunday school when we had such a position, and the ones that made people feel at home when they came to the church, and continued to do so. And one thing, that connection that I remember very vividly, is the fact that so many of these original leaders, original to me starting in 48, so many of them that I'm familiar with, some of them were maybe second generation by the time I became involved, but it's gone on to a lot of fourth generation situations in this church. And I'm impressed by that. I know in my own case, I have a fourth generation situation here. My grandson, John Truslow, and Allison have a little girl that makes it a fourth generation, and they've joined the church. And my youngest grandson, Whit Ferguson and Nicole, have recently joined, and they were married here, by the way, about 2 years ago. So I've liked seeing the way that the third and fourth generation people participated so heavily in the more recent growth that we've had, both in buildings and in membership. But when I speak of growth, I'm basically talking about the spiritual growth and the fact that each of our 16 ministers that we've had, I didn't know the first eight, but I've known about them through the years. And each of the first eight that I didn't know, from what I hear, had some of the same type qualities, and each one of them had, each of the senior ministers and therefore their staffs, had different strengths. And I know in the ones I have known, the eight that I have known, we had excellent pastors that frankly might not be quite as good at some other facet of their job. We had excellent preachers. We've had excellent administrators. I don't want to go into details about any of them, because they're all good, honest, sincere people. But each one of them had their strengths, as I saw. And I can't think of a single one that I will go this far as specifics. I can't think of a single one that had all of the main ingredients to a large extent. They had their own specific specialties. It was much like the medical profession. Not necessarily that they were aiming to be specialists, but it seemed to me that that's the way it wound up. I've done a lot of talking here.
Well, I remember when you were just talking about the kids running on the tiles in the sanctuary.
Yeah.
Tell that little story, how kids used to, when you were, because you were chairman of Building and Grounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell some of the antics that you had.
Well, while I was chairman of Building and Grounds, happened to be the time when we needed to replace tiles on not only on the sanctuary, which was the most critical part, but on one or two of the other buildings that had tile roofs. Obviously, we tried to figure out why the tiles were coming loose from their supporting underlayment, and in so doing, we began to discover that there had been some traffic on the roofs, and we knew that none of the maintenance people had been trafficking the roof. But it turned out that some of the kids in the church had figured out a way to climb up on a low roof paralleling the rampway that used to go to the north driveway, just north of the what is now the chapel. They climbed up on that roof, and once they were there, they had access to every roof in the church. And they would wind up sometimes up in the parapet wall around the steeple, and some things went on there that none of us really cared for too much. But I'm not talking about ugly things, I'm just talking about things that boys do, shooting BB guns, whatever. But anyway, we finally discovered where the problem was, and we knew that we would be removing that roof anyway, so we just decided that the best out was to take that little lean-to roof down, and it was kind of comical in a way to realize that the only thing that was happening was what happens in any boy's life as they grow up. But anyway, we took it down, and of course later on we got into a major building program. It didn't matter anyway because we changed all that. But now, one of the pleasures, I taught for about 6 years in the 13-year-old group when I first joined the church. And one of the pleasures was seeing that group, my daughter happened to be one of them, seeing them grow up and what they amounted to. I ran into one of them Sunday that I hadn't seen in quite some time. And in fact, I believe maybe he had left the church for a while, not the church, but left this church for a while. And apparently he's come back because I've now seen him a couple of times, and I'm hoping he has. But he's very successful in his business venture. And he was a typical boy at 13. And I enjoyed it very much. I don't know, I'd have to think of a while to think of any more specific stories, I guess, but my church has meant a terrific amount to me in so many ways, and especially for a Presbyterian turning into a Methodist. There's not that much difference, but there is a little difference. And it's been interesting, too, to watch the tempo of the church under the various senior ministers. As I mentioned a while ago, the specific strengths that each senior minister has, that takes the church with him. And watching that and watching us balance out, it's, in that respect only, it's much like our government is supposed to be, where he's supposed to have checks and balances among the three major divisions of government. And you get somewhat the same effect with ministers that have different strengths. And watching that and watching it play back into other areas as ministers change, the fact that we have grown like we have over the eight ministers that I'm familiar with. I came here when Dr. Nat Long was on his second run here, and he was the minister that married me, the first to my first wife, who passed away three years ago, and so I had the chance to see some of the especially once I was part of Building and Grounds, I saw a lot of the inner workings of the church, and I can remember Dr. Claude Haynes called me in one day, Jack Haynes' father. And he called me in one day and he said, "Pa, our communion Sunday is not moving like I want it to move. What can we do about it?" And we wound up together making some removable leaves, I guess you'd call them, that hooked onto the back of the chancel rail. Had a bunch of little cup holes in it, and the good altar gill would come in and fill all those little holes with their cups with the wine, and that enabled us to move the group much quicker on Sunday mornings. And we've had somewhat, in a different way, somewhat the same situation when we moved into the new sanctuary. And the fact that now Bill Brett has devised ways to have even more stations for the communion, and it moves like clockwork as far as I'm concerned. Is there anything else that...
That's wonderful.
I have a question.
Good.
Being a younger person, involve people in this church for making sure that there's continued spiritual growth and continued progress for the church, that we don't get stagnant. What would that advice be?
I would think that my just off the cuff, get involved, and get your children involved and get involved with them. I'm not setting myself up as any particular example, but I will say this, that much as it was in my dad's family in the Presbyterian Church, on Sunday morning we went to church. I mean, that was just understood. And I know there are all kind of alternatives now, but I think the best alternative, one of them, is still to go to your church and be active. And be active in your Sunday school. For instance, I have been in the friendship class for 50 some odd years. And at one time we had 250 people in that class. And we were bigger than most Methodist churches. But of course we've dwindled down now to where there are about 22 average that show up in that class. And I have remarried to a member of this church, June Wilkerson, and we decided right up front that we were not going to be in different classes. So she was with me the past year as I was serving a capacity in my class and the friendship class, and then we knew all the time that we were going together to her class, the Timothy class, this year, and that's what we've done. Started at the start of this fiscal year in September. And but to answer your question very, very briefly, get involved. There's so many people, we've seen this, not our church, any church, there's so many people that drop the kids off. And if they don't do it all the time, they do it a lot of the time. But the people need to be, the families need to be involved in their church. And I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I know that worked for me. I know it worked in my dad's family. He had 8 children, and on Sunday morning, we had, Presbyterian Church had its regular pew. Most churches, you had your regular pew.
Right.
Pardon me. Boy, that messed up the sound system. but on Sunday morning, our 10 and our family were in that pew. And of course that changed as the older ones, I was a baby, and it changed as the older ones got older and they were doing their thing, going to Agnes Scott and what have you. But basically on Sunday morning, that's where we were, at Presbyterian Church in Decatur. And I just think that's probably the most important thing. You can't do anything if you're not there. And if you're there, you shouldn't be sitting there like a I didn't want to say it quite that way, but no, you shouldn't just be sitting there. You should be getting involved. And I've been fortunate enough to be involved here in a lot of different ways, and it's been very rewarding to me.
This has been the Peachtree Road Storybook Audio Podcast. If you would like more information about the story shared here, or if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, visit us at peachtreeroadstorybook.org. Thank you for listening, and God bless.